Here we go.
They call themselves
Heroes Asylum.
Uno Morons.
Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum issue 162. Continuing our fantasy.
162? Shit.
Yeah.
I think it's
162, but like issue. But then if you look at our total, I think we're in like in the 170s.
What was that old saying that we had a long time ago? If we passed six episodes, we would just keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, 162 later.
Yeah.
Here we are.
So how you doing, man? How was your week?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. Just catching up on some stuff. As I was talking off air with you, talking about my new smartwatch. Yay. So trying to set that up when we were discussing different wrists that I want to get, you know, kind of get stylish. I'm an old man, but I want to look cool. And, you know, just fetching, watching True Blood season 2. So far, I'm digging it. And talking some fantasy weapons and heroes with you.
Nice. Yeah. You and I were talking about Alien, the new Alien show. Mm. And that's like freaking absolutely loving the hell out of that.
I think one of the things I love about it, it just feels like it would be a prequel to Alien, because it's like you still have the, if you watch the show like you did, like the way they set up their monitors and the computers, it looks very that Alien age. It doesn't look like modernized and like they're floating and stuff. It just looks of that era, and they just kept it going. And every episode ending with a banger music. I mean, come on. It's really, really good. I'm shocked how good it is. But then again, Noah Holloway, he did Legion and a couple other shows, so.
You're on FX too. I mean, that's got some good, some good shows. And then of course I finally got a chance. I was talking to a coworker last week, catching up on movies. We were talking about, you know, Superman and other movies. And, we were talking about, Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, whatever this one. Oh my God.
Oh,
I love it. I mean, it was a good movie, but they just need to stop. It's time to just put that one to rest for a little bit. Like you and I, you always used to talk about, you know what, let Wolverine rest, you know, give him a breather, let something else happen. They need to do this one. This just didn't seem like anything but like a standalone Jurassic movie.
It just seemed weird. It seemed a lot like part three. Remember how part three was seemed kind of off from the first two? This is how this one was. And like you mentioned before, the weird, like, I don't know what that dinosaur was.
Well, they explained it. No, they explained it at the beginning. Like, these are mutant dinosaurs. That this is where they threw their mutants at. Because, like, the one, like I said, the one looked like, you know, like he looked like a rancor. But if you looked, he had, like, four arms.
Yeah, it was like the baby arms. And then he had, like, his, like, bigger arms.
Yeah, and then like, if you look at the other ones, were all, like, deformed and mutated. So it's like... Oh, they're just digging in. They're scraping the bottom of the barrel, and I just, again, I love them. I haven't seen a bad one yet, but they just need to give it up.
I just don't know what's left to go. I mean, what is left for them to do? Really? I mean, they've
space.
Been to the States.
They got space. They got to go to space now.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's really all we got left.
That's the ultimate, isn't it? Jurassic Planet. That's what's going to come next.
Next Jurassic Planet. Maybe they do a crossover with King Kong and Godzilla. I don't know.
Oh, my God. You know what's coming? Dino Riders. You remember that animated show in the 80s, Dino Riders? It's coming, the Dino Riders.
It's been an amazing, like series. Both, you know, the original trilogy, the second one with Chris Pine, and then, like I said, this one just didn't... Like, the other ones, when they ended... Like, you're like, oh, okay, there's still more to come. This one just sort of ended like, okay, that's that story. Move on. And I didn't feel like there was a reason to go on. I'm like, okay, that's... Even with ScarJo in it, you know, she just...
It was one thing that kind of irked me, though. I'm like, the first Jurassic World films or whatever, like you said, you know, dinosaurs were like, oh, like, holy shit, it's a fucking dinosaur. Like, damn, you know. In this last one, it's just like, yeah, who cares? Like, there's a brontosaurus underneath the bridge. Oh, big deal. Like, you know, they're all dead and they're like living on the coast now. It's like, what?
I thought their reaction, like their reaction to the dinosaur being there, was the most meta thing in that fucking show.
Oh God!
Because everybody's sick of dinosaurs.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, they're there. Whatever. So that's like, I literally, as I'm watching, I'm like, you guys are just ragging on yourselves right now, because
I know
we're over this shit, right?
Yeah, it's just like, come on.
But like I said, just overall, I mean, it's still a good movie, fun movie. You know, I like the family part of it mixed in with them, you know. So, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought the cast was great. Just let it rest.
Yeah, let it burn. Let it burn.
So we're going to do, we have been doing fantasy all month. So we're going to end it with fantasy weapons. I know originally, we mentioned like fantasy heroes and their weapons. So, I mean, we will mention the heroes that are with it, but I think it's really more about the fantasy weapons themselves.
Yeah, the weapons of choice. Like, you know, because there are sometimes more iconic than the heroes themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, and you'll see on this list, because a lot of like, there's a couple that go hand in hand, but like after that, it's like, really? He held that? He was wielding that? And that's pretty much the case.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to knock this one out first, because this is something you and I already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You pass on the baton to me. But yes, we're going to talk about the glaive from Krull, which I thought was probably one of the most iconic, awesome weapons growing up. Because, I mean, this was probably my first like experience into, you know, the swords and sorcery kind of world. I mean, we're talking 83. And just like the look of this weapon, it wasn't your typical, you know, sword like everybody has, or battle axe, or any, you know, anything like that. It was a throwing star mixed with a boomerang.
Yeah, that's all it was, but it was like a mystical boomerang.
Yeah, and there was like I love the fact that there's like no backstory to it. Like, there's a little bit of like, hey, this thing is here. He has to go to volcano. If he's the right one, he can stick his hand in the lava, pull it out. And
I think the journey to the glaive itself was cool, because like you said, you don't know anything about it. You just know that he needs it to get to kill this thing. And like, it's just like, oh, we don't know what it is, but it's powerful. And it looks cool, too. It even sounds cool. The sound effects on it, even back then, were so dope. And like you said, it's not a sword. It's not a sandal. It's not a shield. It's just, it's this. Literally, boomerang throwing star.
Yeah, and this is one of those few things. Like, I don't collect like little like weapon type things. I'm not a sword collector or anything like that. But I've got like, you know, I've got a thing of like Harry Potter wands, or I've got like the blades from Moon Knight up on my wall. This is one of those ones that I would love, and it's so weird, just because of how iconic it is. You can't find anything. You have to go on Etsy, and some people will like 3D make them, which they look amazing, but it's just one of those like iconic, just visually catching weapons. And then, of course, you know, at the very end, when you find out, you know, he can't get it back.
Yeah,
it's off. It's done its duty. And which,
that was it. Like, he's trying to reach for it, and it just stays on that demon, and it's just like, ah, it's like he was a one and done. He was one and done. But yeah, dude, what a weapon, man. And like, what a way to start.
So what do you got?
I guess I'm going to go next. And my weapon is more, not the weapon itself, but the story behind it. And that's Andriel from the Lord of the Rings series. Like, to me, the story of the Andriel sword, you know, used to chop off Sauron, you know, the rings and all that. And like the journey to getting it back. And like how it's haunted and all that. And like, you literally, when you're watching the Fellowship of the Ring, you see Aragorn go into that room and he sees the sword just torn apart in pieces. And of course, the story behind it. I think that's
Are you talking about Narsil?
Is it Andriel or?
No, it's Narsil, the broken one.
Is it Narsil? That's,
yeah, though. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Okay. That's then I had the wrong name. I had Andriel on there. Maybe I just, but that's it. Yeah, Narsil, like that sword and the story itself behind it. That's why I hope in this Lord of the Rings TV series they have going on right now, I think they're going to slowly introduce that sword and, you know, the holder of it as well. So I just, you know, one of my favorite weapons, man. It wasn't used a lot, just like in a little cutscene, but like the story behind it. And
I don't know if we're going to see like that part of it, because with that blade, its story is the Battle of Sauron. It's there. There, it's nothing. It wasn't a legendary blade beforehand or anything like that. It's just what made it legendary. Was what it was used for at that moment during the main battle.
Yeah. I would agree. Story over, you know, style.
All right. So mine is, since you kind of, I mean, mine was Narsil, by the way. I did have Narsil.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I wasn't sure which route you were going to go. So, because there are a lot of great Lord of the Rings swords and daggers. So, but that's fine.
I think that one had the most story. Okay.
That's fine. I may undercut you on this one. I don't know.
I'm shocked.
But the holy hand grenade of Antioch.
Oh, damn. Sorry. I was... See? Great minds do think alike. I also had that on.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, I did. I had the holy hand grenade. That was going to be my next one, because I wanted to throw a curveball. I was like, fuck.
That was my curveball. I was like, man, I don't know if he'll have this one. I don't know if he'll go that deep or not. I know you're a Python fan. I know it's one of your favorite movies, but I was like, man, I wonder... So yeah, so nice. If nobody knows, it is it's a explosive sacred rite, and it's a weapon of for killing the rabbit of Kemnog?
Kemnog, yeah, the rabbit of Kemnog.
But yeah, I mean, especially during this time when like this came out, there was a lot more fantasy going on, and for the Monty Python guys to take it and like morph it into. What the movie became, not just the weapon, but what the movie became, because I mean there were just so many great one-liners in there. We did this one how many years ago?
While I think like a couple, 3 years ago, maybe
three or 4 years ago. Yeah. So if you guys dig through, find the old show we had. We do a watch along for this one.
Oh, so good. Never gets bad. The holy hand grenade.
It's just a scratch.
Just a scratch. Well done. Well done. I didn't. Damn.
Hey, you undercut me. I undercut you. Okay,
man,
so hopefully that's we're good. We're good from here on out.
We should have flipped our chases. But you know what's in my mind, which is actually kind of scary. I guess I'm gonna go next, and mine is kind of a weapon that I'm gonna go branch out a little bit more as we're doing these weapons, and that's the identity discs in Tron. The first identity disc. And then, of course, later on, you get the dual identity disc, which was wielded by the particular character, Tron. That's the way he fought, and he always looked cool. I always thought that was the coolest thing, especially in that first Tron movie. Like, everybody else has single identity discs. He had two, and he could fight. And even in the Lex one, in Tron Legacy, he wasn't there. They had a character that was a pseudo him, if you watched it. And he was wielding those double, identity discs. It just always, it's a cool visual, man. Like, just watching somebody throw those around, and if you watch any of the Tron movies, like, I don't care what people say about them, but those, like, disc throws, they're cool. The light cycles, cool. That whole world, that's, like, special effect-wise, cool. Music, even better, and I'm glad Nine Inch Nails is doing the new one, and I heard that first single, and it looks like they're going, like, really techno on it. I'm like, okay, I'm in. But, like, identity discs, definitely, like, especially those double ones that Tron had.
Very cool. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, because I, again, one of those most iconic, like, visual scenes. And I think probably what was the first level on the old Tron game, if I remember correctly.
I think it is. I remember that. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been.
It's been a while, but I think you're right. It was, like, one of the first levels on there. It was such a cool game, too. Light Cycles. I think you fought the Recognizer, and the cool thing, and you're fighting the grid. It's cool. It's cool. Get a chance,
Yeah, definitely.
Watch it. No. What you got there, sir?
Well, you kind of went sci-fi, so I'm going to lean that way too, because I know you and I talked about, like, we both sort of had a leaning sci-fi, and they both are weapons, hand weapons, in a way. But this one's from Star Trek, the Batholith.
That's Klingon.
Yes, that's right. The Klingon sword, which is a dual, it's a dual bladed sword. And it's probably one of the coolest ideas of it, especially when they were introducing like Worf in Star Trek, The Next Generation, and how like we always like saw Klingons as these battle hardened, like just like drinking, hard drinking, like fighters. But then when he brings this in, it's almost a Zen movement. Almost a Tai Chi movement on how he's holding the weapon and using it. And then, like, they dig even deeper and they go into, like, the legend of Kalis, and who was, like, the original Klingon, and, like, it just so many great, like, backstories with it. And it becomes an iconic weapon throughout all of Star Trek. And not only that, but then you also get to see it again during, I think it's Picard Season 3. And you get to see that there's a third weapon that's very similar to that. So,
and like, Worf was using it, correct? I think he was, yeah.
Yeah.
He was using it. Okay, yeah. I think he was using it in the fight during the bar scene. That's what I'm remembering from. Yeah. I remember the weapon specifically. I knew it had a lot of stuff because Worf, when he had it, especially Next Generation, he kind of looked at it, he respected it. You know, like, it wasn't like a thing you just throw away. And there was like honor to fighting with it. And I think they used that in one of the trials for the Klingons, if I remember correctly. Like, that was the weapon they used. So yeah, definitely a significant weapon. Like, deep cut too, because I wasn't thinking of that at all.
But, and then, I mean, if you go to any comic convention and if you see a Klingon, you know they're going to definitely have that.
They always have that. No matter what. And there's some cool Klingon, especially cosplay-wise, that people do. It's like, man, the amount of time and the makeup takes to do that. Excellent, sir. I guess I'm going to go. I'm going to delve off into the world of video games. Yeah, a little curveball. And this is an iconic weapon for the God of War himself, Kratos, and that's the Blades of Chaos. Now, not only the Blades of Chaos are a dope weapon if you use them in the game, but the story behind them, how he got them, the murder of his family, the guilt of these blades being wrapped around his wrists, and he could never get rid of them no matter what because of the guilt, and that torments him. And when he puts them back on, like the guilt he feels about how he killed his family. I know it was a little curveball, but it is fantasy, and that's the Blades of Chaos.
Very cool. Yeah, definitely. I remember when I'm not a PS player anymore, but yeah, when I did have PS, yeah, I remember those blades. And that's like,
yeah,
that just watching him battle is just like iconic.
It's like, and the sound it made too. It's just like, you're just literally whipping around these swords and just murdering people left and right. Ugh. Many a good Friday nights getting home from a bar playing that game. So fun. And so iconic. What you got there next, sir?
Well, actually, I think I'm going to, since you went video games, I guess I think I'm going to go my video game one. Because I also had a video game weapon. It's not specific to one character in this franchise. It's the weapon of this type of warrior. But it's the Assassin's Creed, the Hidden Blade.
Oh.
That every assassin carries, and a lot of times you don't get this at the beginning. You have to learn, you have to train, you have to become an assassin, because there's sometimes you get it right away. There's been some, like, you can go an hour, 2 hours into the game before you even get your blade. But yeah, it's one of the most like iconic moments in the game, is like taking that leap and like that slow motion and attacking. But then it's used throughout the game. Sometimes, and some of the other games, they don't use it as sly as they used to, like where you just walk by somebody and stab them and keep walking. Some of them, you can't do that anymore. But yeah, there's not only that, but there are some that could do extra things to it as the levels. Yeah, well, okay. Not the levels, but as the game went on. I mean, we're talking, oh my God, it's almost 20 years of this franchise. I mean,
holy shit. Jesus.
But you got to realize how much they went. You know, they started with the original series, and they went backwards, and they went forward as pirates, then Vikings, and then they went into London during the late 1800s.
Did they go to London? I didn't play the London one.
Yeah, the Syndicate. Yeah.
Oh,
and
man,
so as the game and the world progresses and technology progresses, so does the weapon. So eventually, you get where it shoots a crossbow bolt, poison darts, it even shoots bullets. So, but for me, it will always go back to the original, the Hidden Blade.
And I remember getting that Hidden Blade. Hard as hell to get. I hope when they go forward in Assassin's Creed, I wonder what they're going to do, like a futuristic setting. I mean, we've been stuck so long, and I get in the modern, like the Greece and like Norway and all that. We had like far away Japan, Egypt.
I don't think they'll go future, because that defeats the whole point of your going back in time into your DNA, your family's DNA, and going back. So I don't see them going further, going future. I mean, if anything, they bring it up to maybe in the 1900s, like mid 1900s or something like that. But I don't see it going into the future, other than if they go back to, and they really haven't done it that much, where they go to the future where you're playing this character who's experiencing these flashbacks. But yeah, I think they'll go backwards. And honestly, man, they really hit a lot of the big ones. I mean, I don't know where they could go backwards to.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, do you go 80s? Be bold?
Well, I mean, you could go that route. It's kind of a sensitive area, but I mean, you could hit like World War II, Vietnam. I mean, you can go to like stuff like that.
Vietnam be interesting.
You could go back to like the Cold World, the Cold War, you know, and be like, you know, a spy, espionage spy.
That'd be nice.
Go that route, you know, but blend Assassin's Creed John to blank, Agent 47.
Hitman.
Yeah, I mean, you can go, I mean, so, but yeah, no I think, it, yeah, if anything, they continue backwards, which I thought one of my favorite games in recent times was Mirage, and like I heard nothing. It was like no build up. It was just there. It was there, and I was like, man, this is. And it was a fun game. I loved it. So, but again, there's not a lot more they can do. I mean, other than, and this is the only thing that disappointed me was the title was the Assassin's Creed Origin. That wasn't an origin story. That was like just another one like around Egypt time. And I'm like, is that really origin? You sure you can't go further back?
I'm sure they can go further back. Maybe they're into Crusades or something.
They've already done Crusades. They started with Crusades.
Oh, that's right. They did Crusades. Oh,
so, I mean, like, they can go further back if they want to, you know. So, but, again, it's one of my favorite game series. And, like I said, that weapon is just, to me, like, iconic with them.
I'm just saying, bring it to the future with that weapon. Assassin's Creed, like Brooklyn or something. I want to go next, and this is one of my favorite swords of all time. And if you have it on the list, Mike, I would be shocked. And that is the triple-bladed sword from The Sword and the Sorcerer. If you've ever seen this movie. Wielded by the weapon of Talon.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. No, it's not on my list, but yeah.
Oh, man. Like, if you ever see, when you're like freaking 9-year-old, 10-year-old me, and you're watching this, you see a regular sword. No, this guy has a triple sword. And the middle of the sword shoots out. Which is even doper. And I thought, like, my God, this has got to be the dopest weapon I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, for the longest time, even now, it still is. Because I haven't seen anybody try to copy that triple-bladed formula. But just the mere presence of it. And, again, it shooting that middle sword out to somebody is insane.
Yeah, I definitely remember that. Not on my list, but, yeah, I remember that. I think that was, like, 80s, wasn't it, when everything was double? Everything was bigger in the 80s.
Double up, man. Everything's double, man. You gotta make it bigger and better. But this one was a triple bladed list.
Yeah, I do remember. Mm. Yeah, I did look across that. I was like, I don't think that'll. I don't think I'll choose that one. Well, this one is dearest to both you and me, to our hearts, and that is the first blade.
Oh.
From Supernatural, it's the jawbone of a donkey that was once connected with the mark of Cain.
It's weird. I thought you would have chosen the Colt. Nope. But like the first blade had more of a story, man.
It had more of a story. It had more of a meaning. It was a true weapon. The Colt's just a gun, you know. But the other ones were very generic. But the out of all of them was the mark of Cain, and you know, marked. Once told by Crowley, is the most dangerous weapon on the planet.
And it is. And like the way that the weapon was made, you know, it's like the jawbone of his brother. And that
it was a jawbone of a donkey.
I thought it was of his brother.
No. You put that in there because you're sick and twisted. So I get it, though. I'm liking where you're going with that. But
that would be twisted, though.
Yeah. I'm going to kill Jesus. You and...
I'm gonna make you a weapon to kill people. Like, oof.
But yeah, I think one of the cooler storylines, especially around that time frame when they were starting to like hit a little slag in the show. I thought that introduction to Cain, and then like there were so many like great parts to that overall storyline.
That storyline like ran for almost three seasons. Yeah. If you think about it, that's like the longest one they've had, and it was organic because it led into so many other things. Like literally, it was like the beginning. You know, this weapon would like introduce like the further seasons of Supernatural, set up like, you know, characters and everything else. So it had a major role, and I don't think it was ever destroyed.
It was placed on the darkness. So which basically the blade is now just rendered useless because it's with the darkness.
Oh, okay. I thought they lost it or they hid it somewhere. I have to rewatch that again. Okay, so let me go with my next one here, sir. And that is from the Highlander series. One sword, wielded by two guys, last name McLeod, Duncan, and of course, Connor McLeod. And that is the katana sword.
Sir.
Oh, boy. Three. Oh, that's right, Ramirez, right?
Yeah, where do you think it came from, sir?
I know, yeah, okay. Well, Ramirez and the McLeods. Just a cool design, especially when you see, it was like one of the first times I actually saw a hilt that was like designed like a, it was ivory white dragon or that it was. And it just looked cool. Like, even though I kind of had a heart for like the first sword that Connor McLeod had, it was like a big broad sword, very large, and just had his McLeod last name in the middle of it, which I thought was pretty cool. But the katana sword for me, more function, and it was fashionable too, you know, just good at cutting off heads. And then like that same sword that was started in the movies, you know, it was passed down to the other McLeod in the TV series. So I'm just glad that sword had a little bit of legacy.
Which
going
I have issues with.
Because
Connor and Duncan were around the same time. How could they both have the same sword? Got to remember, Duncan didn't, or Connor didn't die until, like, I think, like, the Source, I think, which is, like the fifth movie.
Oh, man, the fact that you remember that movie is pretty bad.
Like,
it was not good.
Like, I mean, like, how that's my only issue. It's like, were there two swords? Did they make two swords? Because there was, what was it, the one with Mario Van Peebles, where he discovers Connor, and he's in Japan making a sword,
man.
So...
Like I said, yeah, what's supposed to be the katana sword?
Like I said, yeah, that sword has a shadowy past, and I believe there may have been two swords. So that's why I'm just like, I don't.
I mean, now you got me thinking, because he would technically, yeah, he would be around in that era. Mm-hmm. I never thought of it like that.
Man, that's not a
interesting. See, now I'm questioning the Highlander, one of my favorite movies.
You should always question the Highlander. After number one, always question the Highlander. All right. As much as I love the series and all its quirks, always question the Highlander.
Yeah, timelines are a little bit messy.
It's a little messy.
Oh boy. All right. Well,
next one is actually, I'm going to a TV series again, and this may surprise you. This is the Chakram from Xena. Remember her two discs?
Oh, yeah. They're like they were like the older version of the identity discs.
Yeah,
that's it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
So they were like the grandfathers.
But it was just because not just how she used it as, you know, a throwing weapon, but she also used it as a hand to hand weapon.
Oh my god! And that war cry that she would do every single time with those things, whatever it was. I'm like, oh god! You knew she was coming when she had that. She meant business, and she go throw those things.
Wow! But yeah, that was because you got to think, like, in those Hercules shows, there was never anything iconic. She's the only one out of that had something iconic as a weapon. Saw it. I mean, always hanging off her side. It was just badass, especially with you know, her in general.
Oh my god, she was a badass. Like, I think Xena went further than Hercules did as far as season-wise goes. I know Hercules got canceled or ended first, and Xena kept going. And her storylines got weirder and weirder and weirder. Like, eventually she had a kid, and the kid hated her. It got a little strange those last couple of seasons. But, like, the character herself, Lucy Lawless, god, she kicked so much ass.
Yeah.
Oh, and those things. Jesus. I mean, what else can you say? Just do the la 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 la, the little cry that she did all the way. Let's see what I got here. I got another sci-fi weapon, and this is an iconic weapon, and it was literally made while they were doing this movie. Like, they came up with this idea, and that's Ripley's flamethrower, which is a combination of this machine gun and flamethrower that she used in Aliens to kill, like, all the babies, and to eventually kill, you know, well, she didn't use it to kill the queen. She used a crane for that, and I could have put the crane up there. But I like Ripley's flamethrower a little bit more because it's more iconic. You've seen the shots sometimes with the trailers where she's holding Newt and then she has that gun. And that's Ripley's flamethrower, basically. Fun, iconic weapon. And I hope Alien Earth kind of alludes to it. That'd be kind of fun. A little Easter egg.
Well, they sort of have. I mean, when you look at the weapons that the security are carrying, they look very, very similar. Like, they're early representations. of that machine gun.
Interesting.
Yeah, as far as
I'll have to look again.
Yeah, as far as a flamethrower goes, no, that's I don't think that'll we'll see much of that. I hope they don't like do too many nods. I mean, we've got enough of like little nods that they have. But yeah, I don't need that. But to be honest, do you remember the machine gun super soakers we had when we were growing up?
Yeah, I love those things.
I literally turned two of those into that.
Of course you would.
I had two of them. I taped them together. One fired and one was a Nerf. So yeah. So I.
Oh god. Yeah. I didn't think of that. I should have thought of that. I had like two big ones. I would just carry the side, like be like, no. You know, Sergeant Rock and shit.
I had taped them together, and so I had them together.
I think that was the funniest thing too, because like every summer, if you notice, because those things when they came out, they just got bigger and bigger, and every summer like it was a match to see which one will have the bigger one next summer. Like, okay, this one's bigger than this one, and they got ridiculous, and they got too big, and I was like, okay, we're done with this.
My next one actually crosses in two areas. It crosses into literature and a TV series.
Mm.
And that is Needle for Arya Stark.
Oh, okay.
The last gift John gives her before he takes off to the wall, and she carries this thing throughout her journey. And everybody, you know, very simple, you know, just like laughs at her, like, what is that thing? But it becomes this, her iconic weapon, especially when you see her journey through becoming one of the Faceless Men and how being something smaller, something like not as, you know, obvious, it just fit that character and then that path that she had to take. And I just...
That is my favorite character in Game of Thrones, so I'm never going to argue when you put Needle up there. I loved her arc. I love how the sword kept going with her and how she got it from Jon Snow, and she didn't know how to wield it. And I think when she's learning how to... When she's sword practicing, I think in season one, and like the guy's like, you don't know how to use that, or whatever, and then she's like, eventually I will. And like you said, that journey until when she does, and when she uses all her skills together, like that's how you grow a character.
And I think probably from the show, probably one of my favorite scenes with her in it, it's not even a fight with her. It's a sparring match was between her and Brianna Tarth. And how she's like, you should get a different weapon. She's like, nope, this will be fine. And how she literally takes this knight, you know, and just shows her what she is. And I just, again, that made that weapon even more iconic with that.
Oh. So many good things about Arya Stark I could just go on and on and about. But yeah, that sword, like I said, it just went with her on her journey. And eventually, you know, she's scolded knight. Let me go with mine. Famous from literature, famous sometimes in the movies. And if you know Norse mythology, and that's Gungnir. That's the spear of Odin. I could have put Mjolnir on here too, of course. But I think Gungnir, you know, of course, the spear that never misses. Held by King Odin and his and the One-Eyed and the ravens that he has, but the significance he has that he wields that. I'm not even talking about the Marvel one, which kind of used it pretty well in the first film and you never saw it again, but like this story, this spear, a story in itself and the power that has with Odin and just like the journeys it's been, like just think of the things it's killed for Odin to get to the places that he got. And I think in the show Vikings, I'm not sure if they show it, if there's a dude who holds it. There is an Odin presence in that show. Like I said, I haven't seen it, but I think Gungnir is also a presence in that show.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Long weapon.
So for me, I'm going to the Avatar. I know I've lived in the Avatar every week, and there is one weapon that defines one of the great characters in here. And I've mentioned the character before, but Sokka, who is... the Last Airbender's friend, brother of the eventual love interest. But this weapon, as Sokka's coming into his own, he starts off with a pretty iconic weapon. He's got two boomerangs, and that's sort of like the weapon of the water tribe. But during his journey, not only does does like the Avatar take on a master and learn things, but so do the rest of the Team Avatar. They like, you know, they each get a master into their respected like areas. And one of them is Sokka, and he has to go to this master to learn how to properly sword fight. And this guy just does not want to teach him, but he has to go through the whole process. He waits and waits and waits and learns everything. But as he becomes a better warrior with the weapon, it's time for him to choose his weapon. And what one of the things they do is he has to forge his own weapon. So to do so, he has to go out to the wilderness, find a weapon. And what he discovers is a recently fallen meteorite. So he takes the meteorite and basically forges his weapon, which he calls his space sword. But because of its ability, its unknown origin, it can literally cut through various metals with little to moderate effort. I mean, it becomes this iconic weapon for him throughout the rest of the journey. And it's just one of those moments that, like I said, he's not the main character. He was on my sidekick list. This shows his growth as something more than just a sidekick. He becomes a warrior in his own right.
And he goes on that journey, which I like. I mean, like I said, I haven't seen Avatar yet, but it just sounds like he goes through something to get that sword and to get to that place. And I like the name Space, so that's pretty funny. I definitely got to check Avatar out. All right, what do I got for my last one? Hold on, I lost my list, guys. All right, there we go. So my last one, also from mythology, if you know, it's been in video games. Hell, it was in the last Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which was not great, but I thought it was kind of fun. That's the Trident of Poseidon. Obviously, you know the story of the Trident. It controls the seas and all that, and he who dwells holds the Trident will control the seas, blah. But in the recent Pirates of the Caribbean movie, when I watched it, it had a lot more elements to it. Like, it had a lot more control. It was kind of spooky in a way. Not the greatest movie in the world, but, you know, the weapon itself used in so many things. The games of God of War, it's also in there. And like I said, it's just like an iconic thing, and Aquaman has it. So it's just one of those weapons that kind of like transcends and keeps going forward if you're a water lover.
Definitely, yeah. That is a god level weapon. I have my last one because I know we kind of undercut each other a little bit here.
It's okay.
But this goes back to a series that actually you have brought up. And I'm surprised I never had, but Harry Potter.
Oh, he was one of the ones I took off the list.
The Elder Wand. On there,
yeah, I had the Voldemort's wand on there.
Yep. Well, it wasn't just Voldemort's wand. It was actually one of the original keepers of the Deathly Hallows, which was also one of the original founders of Hogwarts. And there's a massive, just beautiful story behind the history of the Elder Wand and what it does and where it came from in the story of these brothers. It's an amazing story. Like, I mean, the world she built was amazing to begin with, but then to throw this into there and then just to find what the Elder Wand is capable of and finding out that it's the last piece between Voldemort and Harry. So I cannot wait. I know they're working on the, there's a series coming out here shortly on HBO.
Did you see the stills, dude? Wow. And I guess from every Potterhead is like, dude, I'm glad they're doing the series because there's so many books. They missed a lot of stuff in the films.
Well, I mean, that's why I've always been a fan. If you're going to do something, if you're going to take a book or anything, put it in a show. That's like you and I were talking about them doing like, you know, an Obi-Wan movie. I was like, I'd rather them do an Obi-Wan show because the movie's only 2 hours long. A show, you can get like 5 to 6 hours, 8 hours, depending on, you know, the length. So you can do a lot more, get more nitty gritty into it. But yeah, no, definitely there's a lot I'm looking forward to, and I can't wait to see like when they start like delving into this and seeing what they're able to do. I thought the story they told in the movie for the Elder Wand and the visual parts were amazing. But yeah, no, definitely. And this is one of the ones I told you I have a wand collection. That's one of the ones I have.
It's funny you say that because when I took my daughter years, 100 years ago, to when Harry Potter Land first opened up, the first thing she wanted was a wand. So I was like, which one do you want? And she bought the Voldemort wand. And I'm like, really? And it was like the most expensive. It was like $100. I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm not going to come back here again. So
No. I have the Elder Wand. I have Snape's wand. And then I have Sirius's wand. Those are the three I have. So
those are cool wands. I have to look up some wands. Add it to my lightsaber collection.
I had to wait till we went to one of our local Ren fairs, because online they're like fucking ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
So we went to one of our Ren fairs here. And I was like, oh, there they are. Okay, perfect price. And then you can find like online, you can find like little wand stands. So I just have that.
Such a nerd.
Yes, sir, I am. And I got it right in front of my Harry Potter book. So you can suck it even harder.
I'm not hating. I mean, look, I got two lightsabers hanging from my wall. So
I've got my Yennefer Funko Pop in front of my The Witcher book series. So yeah, I've tried to get every time I have a, like if I got a complete book series, I get a pop or something to match it. So
significant. That's cute. Like whenever you're ending, like yes, here's the pop. I'm done. What's the next one? You're gonna get like a Stephen King pop. Oh, that there. Nice. I was going to say, like, if you read every Stephen King book, you get like a pop of Stephen King.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. That's just he just keeps going. So, yeah, that's never going to.
Yeah. Are we going under Stephen King or the assumed names?
Yeah. No. Well, even that, but he's still writing books. He just came out with one a few months ago.
Yeah, he's rolling, man. Good for him.
All right, guys. So that was our fantasy month. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Something a little different. We will catch up next month and see what we got going on for you. I think we still got to sit down and figure it out.
Yeah, we'll do that off air. We'll check it out. We'll figure it out.
All right, guys. Well, make sure you do check us out online. If you are interested, we do have our old archives. So check that out as well.
See ya.